Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Well, are you in the mood for a little bit of adventure? Would you like to be able to fulfill a dream wish of maybe kayaking rapids or going from one point of the country to another? Well, there's a gentleman that's on the phone with me today, Mike Barenti, and he has done exactly that. If you can imagine 900 miles that he traversed, Kayaking Alone is the name of his book, 900 miles from Idaho's mountains to the Pacific Ocean. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot for having me today, Donna. I appreciate it.
Well, it's an absolute delight. I really enjoyed your book, and I have to say I'm a bit biased because I live in the Pacific Northwest, and right now at this very moment, the weather is rather drippy and miserable with a very gray sky that's typical for our environment. As you well know, because you're in Spokane.
I am in Spokane, and actually, it's not snowing now, but I was looking out the window at snow flurries earlier today. We've had kind of a cold, wet spring over here as well.
Yes. Now, you're a writer and a journalist. You've worked as a reporter for the Yakima Herald Republic and the Idaho Falls Post Register. You've been a teacher of English. You've done creative writing in various college environments. And you've published works in journals such as The River Teeth and The Ascent. I really got a kick out of your book, especially at the beginning, because you went on this journey for what reason?
Well, I had been working as a reporter at the paper in Yakima, and part of my job, part of my beat there was to cover the Yakima Indian Nation. So I wound up through that because, as you probably know, the native peoples here in the Northwest are salmon are an integral part of their culture.
Yes.
And so I started writing about salmon because of that part of my job. And also, I don't fish a lot anymore, but I used to fish quite a bit. Did it for a living for a while. So I kind of have this strange fisherman's interest in fish that I think all fishermen have. And kind of when I started writing about some of the salmon issues, it got covered piecemeal, and which is just sort of the nature of newspaper reporting. You kind of write about whatever the latest thing that's happening is, and I didn't feel like I was always giving the readers a big picture, and so I started to think, well, the best way to really kind of understand what's going on in the Northwest and what's happening with land use and the environment and fish and all of this is to go look at a big chunk of river, and I think then being a kayaker, it was natural that the way to look at a big chunk of river was from the river in a boat.
Well, that is an adventure, because I've been on White River Rapids, and they're not exciting to me. I did it once, and I thought, that's great, that'll last me for the rest of my life. They were number 5 rapids, and I really did not choose to go through it again. So I have a little bit of an empathy for someone wanting to do an adventure like this, but 900 miles worth, what was the amount of time that it took you to do that 900 miles? When did you start? When did you finish?
It took me 52 days, and I started towards the end of May on May 28th, and I finished July 18th. And another day I was looking through because I kind of have been getting this question quite a bit. Within that time period and within those 52 days on the river, there were 5 days where I didn't paddle.
Mm-hmm. Well, you encountered some interesting aspects. Now, when you started off with this, you had a fiancé.
Right.
Juliet, is she still talking to you?
She is. She's married to me. She went ahead and married me. And, we actually, when I started this, I had a fiancé, and now I have a wife and 2 kids.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. All right. So all of it worked out for the best.
It did.
Now, let's talk about the beginning of a journey, because whenever anyone decides to do an adventure like this, you really have to go prepared. And I laugh because in your book you said, You hated it when gear was smarter than you were.
Yes.
Now explain that to my audience.
I don't know how many people are familiar with whitewater kayaks, but there's not a lot of space in it. And I used a fairly large boat, but they've got to be small enough to get through the rapids and be maneuverable and such. And so I was trying to get everything to fit into the boat and was having some problems and kind of going through my gear and wanted to have had a pretty fancy Gore-Tex jacket. And I couldn't really figure out how I was going to make it fit, and my fiance, my wife now, Juliet, I was going to leave it behind, and Juliet took it and said, well, here's how it's set up so that you can basically shove the whole coat into one of its pockets, and she said, and made it much smaller than I could make it by trying to fold it, although folding clothes is not my strong suit, and she was just like, here, it'll fit now, and I was like, you know. And that's where that came from. It's like, you know, the gear was smarter than I was. It was well designed. I just couldn't figure it out.
You really didn't take that much with you, but you had to be prepared. You took a water filter, a backpacking stove, fuel bottles, some clothes, a spare two-piece paddle, two pots that fit together, you said, like nesting dolls.
Right.
And also served you as plates. Ramen noodles, a staple of every camper's life, I think, and every college student's life. Pasta, instant couscous, Pop-Tarts, oatmeal, cashew nuts, and granola bars. And you had to work with all kinds of stuff, a synthetic sleeping bag. You knew you were going to end up being cold and damp, and you hated that more than anything. I don't know anybody that gets excited when you're out in the wild and you're cold and you're damp and you have no way of keeping warm. But you knew you were going to go through three major rivers, the Salmon, the Snake, and the Columbia. So you really were prepared, but your parents made you take a locator beacon called an EPIRB.
Yeah, it's pronounced EPIRB, and you also hear people talk about it now sometimes as personal locator beacons, where they, if you turn it on, it'll send a signal up to a satellite that will allow rescuers to triangulate on you.
Now, you planned to follow the Salmon River for 400 miles to the Snake and then paddle 189 miles to the confluence with the Columbia River before going another 325 miles to where the Columbia meets the Pacific Ocean, which is roughly about 900 miles.
Right.
How could you know when you were planning this by the map that you were going to be able to do it in as tight a time frame as you did? Because really, when you think about it, with your time on land, a few days of that, and just getting from one point to another with all the different things that you went through, gee, how could, you know, that's just amazing to me that you just figured it out that efficiently.
Well, I kind of estimated, I mean, part of it is because I kayak a lot. I mean, so it's not a new thing to me. And I figured that I could make 20 miles. I figured I could average 20 miles a day, although and I was pretty close to that, although it turned out also that there was really no such thing as an average day. Some days I went less, some days I went more, but I was pretty close in my guesses of how much I could travel, and that was just sort of how it worked out. And really, the only hard deadline I had was that I was getting married in the end of August, so I needed to be done before that.
Oh, okay, all right. The lady was waiting for you. Now, you said in your book that sabotage kept the Salmon River undammed. Explain that.
Well, yeah, we think it's sabotage. The Salmon is typically, it's generally considered to be the longest undammed river that flows through a single state in the continental United States. I think the longest undammed river in the continental U.S. is actually the Yellowstone River, but that flows through part of Wyoming and Montana. But in the early 1900s, a dam was built on the upstream reaches of the Salmon River, not far from where I started my trip. And at that time, there used to be a run of sockeye salmon that went up into Redfish Lake in central Idaho. The sockeye were the redfish of Redfish Lake. And when the dam was built, the fish ladder didn't work. It didn't really have any system to return so that the adult salmon returning from the ocean could get past it. And so at some point in the 30s, and there's a lot of debate on exactly when it happened. You can find different stories that say when it happened and also who did it. Someone blew up the dam, and you can find things that say that it was a game warden who lived up in the area near the dam, and you can find stories that said he did it on his own, and you can find stories that say he was commissioned by the state to do the work. It's really, you'll read different things, and whoever writes whatever piece you happen to be reading will act like what they're saying is the definitive piece of information, but you can then go find three or four pieces of contradictory information. So at least to me, it was never, the complete story was never clear, and it's probably lost to us at this point just because it's been so long.
Now, salmon is very important to the economies of Idaho, Washington, and Oregon, which you mention in your book. You give some interesting information about Pacific salmon, where they can live out their entire lives in freshwater. Chinook and coho salmon, were stocked into Great Lakes by fish and game departments, survived by spawning in tributaries and maturing in the lakes. There are so many different aspects about salmon, and you bring out so many different points, because while you were traveling, you were talking to different people that are involved with the dams, different historical aspects of the areas that you were going through. And there's a lot of stories throughout your book about various Indian tribes. But I wanted to touch on a bit of information about the 1990s. And that's not that far ago, that long ago. There was an open-pit gold mine that used cyanide to separate gold from rock, and it was started near a creek feeding into Yankee Fork. This gold dredge destroyed the entire salmon habitat, and what happened with that? I mean, how did they manage to close it down finally?
The open pit mine, they weren't making money, so they shut the mine down. I mean, it was an economic decision by the mining company, and so my understanding, at least, it was a cyanide leach mine. They used the cyanide to separate the gold out of the rock, and then what you wind up with is what they call tailings ponds, which is just these big ponds, basically, and it's full of waste rock and water and contaminants that were used in the mining process. And when I talked to someone from the Forest Service District up there, I guess what they've decided to do is they had some problems with some leaks from the tailings ponds, which the mining company corrected. They fixed those. And then they're going to, at some point, and I don't know now, I haven't followed this, when I talked to the person with the Forest Service at the time, they made the decision. They were going to slowly drain the tailings ponds to let, the solution to pollution, in this case, is dilution. They would dilute the contaminants coming out of the idea is that you would dilute the contaminants coming out of the tailings pond as you drain them slowly enough that it wouldn't cause any problems. So that's sort of a separate issue from back in the 50s. There was a gold, what's called a gold dredge, that basically went down the Yankee Fork, which is a tributary to the main Salmon River. Idaho rivers kind of have this convention that they're named this fork or that fork of the main river, and the Yankee Fork goes back to the Civil War, when there were people from the north mining gold on the Yankee Fork. There's also another river in Idaho called the Secesh, so from the southern miners, so the Secesh, which is also a salmon tributary. But this gold mine went and basically it went along the river and dug up the river bottom, and then just like you would pan for gold, except it's doing it with a dredge on this massive scale. And it really caused a lot of problems. As you can imagine, I mean, because you're digging up the river bottom. And so it caused a lot of problems for fish. There's some restoration efforts up in the drainage. I think the Shoshone Bannock tribe is kind of lead on a lot of those efforts.
Now, Juliet is very knowledgeable about the environment, and that's one of the reasons why the two of you, I think, were so compatible, because you have a love of the outdoors, and so does she. But her background deals with erosion and with natural environment, doesn't it?
Well, she's a wildlife biologist. I mean, that's, she's got her degree, is in natural resource management, but she's a wildlife biologist. She specializes in habitat restoration, and a lot of the work she does is on rivers, although she's not a geomorphologist, which is a hydrogeomorphologist is someone who studies rivers, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But she's a wildlife biologist.
But she was making a comment, and you quote her in the book, saying that we don't seem to treat our rivers very well. And it wasn't just in this area, but throughout the country. We really don't have an understanding about the wildlife, the plant growth, how it all has an effect. There is really this very, very sophisticated system that's out there that we haven't even scratched the surface of, hardly.
Right. You're exactly right. I mean, rivers are very complex natural systems, and I think our understanding has grown, but, yeah, I mean, they're complicated, and we don't really understand them, but we alter them a lot, which is, kind of troubling if you think about it, okay, you're altering a natural system. Of course, we all depend on water. So that we're changing the natural environment of something that we all depend on, but we don't really necessarily understand the impacts of the changes that we're making.
You talked about being lonely on your trip at various times, reading a river, and it's really a lesson in patience with a kayak. Now, kayaks can turn over, and you have to know how to roll with them. What is the difference between a kayak, and I believe yours was German-made, what was the difference between your kayak and an average kayak, if there is one that could be called average, that some people would use?
Well, yeah, and I guess that's particularly nowadays, there's not really such a thing as an average kayak, or what's happened is we use different kayaks for different kind of kayaking, I guess, and that probably makes sense in a way, but the kayak I used was actually originally designed for, it's what's called a creek boat. It was originally designed for running very steep rivers that might have, say, big waterfalls, 15-foot or 20-foot waterfalls in them. But it's an older model boat, so it's probably a little bit bigger than what you would find in a standard creek boat today, which is sort of what I was looking for in that I needed room to put stuff in. It also, some kayaks have mini cell foam pillars in the front and the back to strengthen them, but this particular boat, instead of having those pillars, just has very heavy-duty plastic, so it's strong enough without the pillars, which, again, gave me a little bit extra space. And then, of course, once I got down off the Salmon River and onto the Snake River, where the dams back up the river, I swapped out from a sea kayak, or from a whitewater kayak, excuse me, into a sea kayak, which is much longer, and probably the best way to describe it. Like, my whitewater boat that I used on this trip is actually borrowed from a friend, as was a sea kayak, was 9 feet long, and the sea kayak was a little over 17 feet long, and whitewater boats are designed to maneuver through rapids, and they turn well, where sea kayaks are really designed to go fast in a straight line.
Now, you started into the largest wilderness area in the continental United States. Where is that area?
That would be the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness. So it's in central Idaho, and then there's that, and then kind of there's a little gap between those, and then there's also basically, because there needs to be a road access into the Selway Bitterroot wilderness, so there's a road access for people who are rafting the Selway River, and then right next to that there's also another small wilderness area called the Gospel Hump Wilderness Area. So right there in central Idaho, between those two, three places, there's a really big wilderness area.
What is the salmon myth? You talked about that particular myth, and also you mentioned there's only five specific salmon species that live in North America, and you talk about that. You talked with ranchers, you talked with many people throughout your journey, all of them who had different perspectives that the average person doesn't even have a clue about regarding the wilderness areas that they lived in, how they felt like they were disappearing. There were too many developers that were just coming in, building a whole bunch of housing, and there wasn't the concern about the aquifers. There wasn't the concern about the rivers and the trees and the animals. And you have all of these various perspectives that you give through your book. Did it change any of your personal perspectives? I mean, this was quite an adventure for you to go through.
You know, there were a couple of things that kind of really caught me off guard on the trip, I guess. And one of them is that I've lived in, since I'm originally from Virginia, but since I've lived in the West, I've lived in eastern Idaho, and I've lived in eastern Washington. And so I developed what I kind of started calling a inland or an upstream perspective. I mean, I understand the river, and I understand the issues with the river kind of from this inland perspective, where what you tend to hear people talk about is need for power generation, electricity generation from the hydro dam, and you need, and the need to have the river as basically a highway for barge traffic moving, particularly in the area where we are in eastern Washington. A lot of the grain moves to market down the Snake River and Columbia River to Portland, and then on barges, and then it's loaded onto ships to head to Asia and for the noodle market particularly. So when I was eating those ramen noodles, I might have been eating some of that Palouse wheat. But that's the perspective that you hear all the time if you live in this part of the country. And you know, I knew there were other opinions out there, and particularly from my time covering the Yakima Nation. And when you either talk to the region's indigenous people, you certainly get another perspective. And when I got down into the estuary, I also got this other perspective that both the indigenous people and the people in the fishing communities down in the estuary, the Columbia River estuary, really look at the river in a different way because they need different things from the river. They have a different relationship with it than people do here. And I think it's one of those things, I don't know why, it shouldn't surprise me. It's something that I probably, on an intellectual level, knew, but until you kind of go down and experience it firsthand, there's a difference between knowing something intellectually and sort of seeing it and talking to people. And so I think that, you know, as we kind of debate how we're going to manage the Columbia River, what do we do with its resources, we need to keep that in mind, is that, you know, different actions are going to affect different groups of people. And sometimes we can kind of get caught up in, well, what's in our own interest? And not to say that, you know, it's bad or people are selfish. I think it's just natural you sort of see what's around you and kind of focus on that, forgetting that there are other people who have other needs who may be affected by what you do.
You have a quote in here by Aldo Leopold. One of the penalties of an ecological education is that one lives alone in a world of wounds. Much of the damage inflicted on land is quite invisible to the layman. An ecologist must either harden his shell and make believe that the consequences of science are none of his business, or he must be the doctor who sees the marks of death in a community that believes itself well and does not want to be told otherwise. And he wrote that in Round River.
Right.
That sounds rather pessimistic, but it's not all wrong, because most of us honestly do not have a capacity, nor do we have the opportunity necessarily, to look at this. You've done this book You kayaked 900 miles. You talked with people involved with dams. You saw so many different perspectives of the needing of our being able to take care of rivers, but also the ignorance that we have on so many levels, whether it's about the animals, the fish, the water, various things. This is an ongoing process. We have a younger generation that's coming up. What would you want to say to them relative to what I consider one of the most beautiful environments in the world, here in the Pacific Northwest, Idaho, all the way down through the Pacific Northwest? Your journey is just absolutely wonderful. Kayaking alone, what would you say to a young person that's, you know, that's under 12 years of age, to inspire them to really want to be able to know more about this world that they live in?
That's a good question. I hadn't really thought of it, and probably should, since I have kids, and certainly want them to be interested in the world around them. You know, it may be one of those things where, particularly for younger children, it may be not so much about telling them things as taking them out and letting them see it and experience it and enjoy it. And I think that looking back on my childhood, I mean, that's what kind of connected me to the natural world, was just to go out in it. And I think that's how kids make that connection. So maybe for someone under 12, you know, you might kind of talk about some of the ecological issues, but I really think for younger children, maybe just to let them enjoy the natural world. And then, you know, as they get older, you know, starting to look at the consequences of human actions and human decisions, and also, you know, how we depend on the natural world. I think the natural world really provides us with a lot of, for lack of a better word, I mean, a lot of services, which I hate, it's a bad term, but, you know, it provides us with water, provides us, you know, we need clean air, we need clean water, and, you know, natural ecosystems provide that for us if we don't mess them up. So, you know, I think as the kids get older, probably to educate them in that, but, you know, I don't know, I want my kids, I mean, they'll like what they like, and they'll do what they do, and I'll hopefully do a good job as a parent and trust that they'll make the right decisions. But, you know, I want them to enjoy being outdoors and enjoy nature first and foremost. And I think everything kind of with kids, a desire to protect it and know more, kind of flows out of that.
Astoria is a fishing town, and that's where your journey pretty much ended. Your wonderful book, Mark, is Kayaking Alone. It's Mike Barenti. Do you have a website people can go to?
I do. It's www.mikebarenti.com.
Okay, and his last name is spelled Barenti. His book is about kayaking. He talks about his day-to-day experiences, the ups, the downs, the ins and outs, the rollovers, and everything that goes with it. But also, he gives a tremendous amount of information about the living environment, the people that he met, the conversations that went on, the various positionings of thought, attitude, expectation. It's a real eye-opener, I think, because it enables you to see a world that we take for granted too often, but one that needs to be respected and honored in its own special way. And, as he said, it serves us in so many ways and manners that we often just take for granted, but I think we have to pay more attention, because what we do to the earth, what we do to our environment, is eventually going to come around and be done unto us as people. Mike Barenti, thank you so much for being my guest. Again, his website, Mike Barenti, Barenti, Kayaking Alone, 900 miles from Idaho mountains to the Pacific Ocean. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Well, thank you for having me, and I'm also really glad to hear that you enjoyed my book so much and got so much out of it.
Oh, I did. You have a lot of information in it. This is Donna Siebel.
Okay.
Mike has been my guest. We're going to be taking a break for just a moment. Don't go away. We're going to be back as soon as we can.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyMD.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on BBSRadio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna, and telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to give me a buzz, call me at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Also, Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. We also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. Now, if you're a first-time listener, I'm very grateful that you're available and have the time to listen to the broadcast live. I invite you to call in. If you have just a little bit of information to give me, first name or initial, that's all I require. Then let me do my thing, and of course, I'd love to know where you're calling in from. So again, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Now, for those of you in the state of Washington, I've got a class that I'm going to be teaching on April the 19th. It's going to be at the Center for Spiritual Living. This is a Saturday. I don't often have an opportunity to teach classes, so I'm really pleased to be able to do this. It's going to be at 206 North J Street in downtown Tacoma. The building is 100 years old this year, and some of the proceeds will be going towards paying for restoration on this. The topic is going to be mental ecology. It's springtime. This is a good time to get a jump start on your personal vision, your intuitive skills, problem solving. Also, I like to think we're going to be able to help you clarify your perspectives, objectives, and life purpose. So, beauty, style, greatness, hey, it comes from the inside out, and that's what we're going to be working with. So if you would like to make a reservation for this class, it's $89. It includes lunch. Call 253-383-3151. That's 253-383-3151. And then we'll be able to book you in, and we'll have everything ready to go. We like the reservation so we know how many people to plan for the lunch itself. Again, April the 19th. We've got a caller on the line. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Regina, and I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana.
Hi, Regina.
How are you doing, Donna?
Well, I am doing beautifully. I'm looking out of the studio window here, and I'm watching rain pour down as if someone decided to do a spring cleaning of the sky.
Oh, it ain't raining here.
It's just that time of year. It's spring. Absolutely fabulous. But the tulips are happy. They're all enjoying it out there.
Oh,
all right,
bet.
Regina, first thing that I'm looking at with you is a conversation with someone by telephone that you are going to feel a little bit uncomfortable with. And I think more than anything else, it is the use of words that someone will be using in the conversation, and you're going to get this feeling like you're being manipulated. And this is going to make you uncomfortable. You don't like it when people do that to you, and I can't blame you. But what I would do is, instead of getting agitated over it, ask for clarity from the individual that's talking to you. Say, I'm a little bit perplexed about what you're trying to tell me. I'm getting a mixed message. Can you please clarify for me what it is you're wanting to make me aware of? And I think what it is this person is somewhat embarrassed about having to ask you for something, and it would be far better if they just came right out and asked you. But, you know, we human beings do funny things sometimes. And that's what's happening here. So you just need clarification, and that's what I would do. And then base your decision on what you want to do based on the accurate information, not assumptions. Make sure that you understand clearly what it is that they're asking about. And you might even want to repeat it back to them. Say, is this what you're asking me about? And if you get that clarity, then you will not have this uncomfortable feeling of ill-ease, of being sort of set up. And I can't blame you for that. But again, the clarity will be able to put everything into perspective. You're doing a lot better in your communications with people, and you're developing a level of self-confidence where you don't feel like you have to be so cautious about putting out whatever it is that you want to have information about. And that clarity for you and that level of self-confidence growth is really making a difference in your life, and there's going to be an opportunity for you to do a chore, an interaction with someone that could be considered a chore, but you're going to find it's really a lot of fun, but you will know exactly what to ask for in the way of help and assistance, and they're going to be able to give it to you. A lot going on here. I think that you are interacting more and more with people, your communication skills are growing, and you need to pat yourself on the back for it, because I think you're doing a good job. But it's step by step, dear. None of us ever have it right in the beginning. It all takes time to accumulate what it is that we want to refine for ourselves. And that's what you're doing at this time, and keep up the good work.
Well, thank
you. Have a question for me?
Yeah, I do. I've been having problems with my kneecap, my left kneecap, and I didn't know if maybe you could see if something was wrong with it. I've been to a bone specialist, and they didn't know, and I went to a rheumatologist, and they didn't say I had arthritis or anything in it. So, but I get like a patch of like a redness around my kneecap, and it like swells up just a little bit, but then the patches will start going down my leg. And I didn't know if it was from the medicine they had me on, because they had me on Adderall XR, but I didn't know if that was causing it or not.
Well, what you might want to do is, just for curiosity's sake, is just talk to a pharmacist and ask him if he's ever heard of anyone having a reaction through the skin to this kind of medication, and tell the pharmacist about it. And now, the reason I say talk to your pharmacist is many, many times they are much more educated about side effects, and they hear so much more from people than a physician will.
Okay, that was it then, Donna.
Well, I think your general health is quite good. I am not seeing what might be described as an inflammation there, but there could be an agitating effect, and I would like to see you maybe even talk to a physical therapist that deals with people in sports.
Okay.
And if you can find someone that has that kind of background, that sees football players, basketball players, many times what it takes is being around someone that will have conditions of certain areas of the body come up because we have so many specialists. And too often when people are specialists, they don't deal with the whole person. They'll just deal with that one little area. But I think you have got a tenderness in that area naturally because of physical activity. And I think there was injury. You either fell on your knee or something like this a long time ago, but there's a memory patterning in the knee. Actually, it's in both knees. It's not just in the one. But the one seems to be more vulnerable than the other. But I'm seeing some injury memories in the cellular tissue. But I'm not seeing that is the cause. I just think you have a sensitivity here. So your own evaluation may be a very astute one, and I would talk to some people that see unique conditions with that area of the body, and also your pharmacist.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does, Juan. Now, I did have a question on the one I need that I'm going to have this phone conversation with. Is it a female, do you know, or a male? Or
it appears to be a female.
Do you know if it's an older female or a younger female?
I'm not able to discern a tone of voice, and that would be very difficult for me to judge. You know, sometimes you can by a person's voice, but many times you cannot judge their age. So this is not something I'm able to call the age. I would say they're middle-aged and older. This is not a real young person that I'm listening to.
Okay. Thank you, Donna, so much, hon.
Oh, you're welcome. You have a great day.
You too, sweetie.
Bye. Bye-bye. This is Donna Siebel, and if you'd like to call in and chat with me, here are the telephone numbers that you can dial in to 877-876-5227. Or Canadians, 888-815-9756 or 530-876-3222. It wasn't that long ago that I was chatting with you about someone that I had met that ended up with a particular staph infection. And it has been abbreviated because the description of this is like a mile and a half long. To MRSA, or MRSA, that's what people pronounce it. And ironically, I received some information about this, and it is through a medical magazine called Cure. And I thought I would share it with you today because this is something that is significant. And I had shared a little bit of information with you on the air because of a concern I had had that was brought up by a friend of mine who ended up contracting it, not because she was in the hospital, but she somehow or another had been exposed to this because this is an airborne type of a staph bacteria. And it is something that hospitals are dealing with a lot more frequently than many times they like to even talk about. So I got this information and I thought I would share it with you today because I think it is important to be aware. Now, we do have a caller on the line. I'm going to take this caller, and when I finish with this caller, I'll talk to you some more about it. Let's have your first name or initial, please. Welcome to the show. And where are you calling from? Hello, caller.
Hello?
Hi, dear. You're on the air.
Hi, Donna. This is Barbara, and I enjoyed your kayaking show. But recently, I have a question about me personally.
Okay.
I have a medical issue that just kind of came up when I was skiing, and I had it looked at, and it's not going away. And I'm wondering if I should get further, going to see a surgeon or something.
Well, I would say there is a potential, without knowing what it is, what I'm looking at is a potential tear. And I would be concerned about scar tissue. So I think it is worthy of checking. So I don't know what happened or what you did. But what I am looking at is something that is not being given the right kind of recuperation environment so that it has a chance to heal itself. And it is being agitated over and over again. How long ago was your skiing accident?
It was about almost a month ago, and I did have an MRI, and you're right, there was a small tear, but it seems just to be getting worse.
Well, what's happening is your nerves are telling you it is not getting the recuperative care that it needs. So there has been some bruising and some damage to the nerves, and aren't we all stubborn? I mean, the body is such an amazing machine. I know I am. Sometimes I have to get hit in the head almost with a 2x4 to stop and pay attention to what isn't operating properly. And I'll say, oh, well, that's okay. I'll just tough it out, and it'll just go away on its own. Well, sometimes, depending on where an injury is, it won't. So I think it would be wise of you to go in to a sports doctor and maybe even just give them a call and say, this is what's happened, this is what's discovered, but something's not working. And I think that they will be able to tell you what you need to do, because I think they'd be hesitant about surgery. I don't know why, but it's like a 50-50. It could help you, and then it could hinder you.
Yeah.
So it will be your call regardless. But I'd have it checked. I wouldn't ignore it, dear.
Oh, great. Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head. And, I've been hesitant about having any kind of surgery again. And,
okay, Barbara, where are you calling from, by the way?
Oh, I'm calling from Stanford, California.
All right. Now, would you stay on the line? I've got to take a break for a moment, and we'll be right back.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. This is Barbara in Stanford, California. We're going to come back in just a moment. Don't you go away.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyND.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on bbsradio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Barbara?
Yeah.
Okay, you're still on the line with me. It would probably be really a good idea for you to go and have it checked out and then ask what you need to do so that the body can heal itself naturally.
Yeah, because it's starting to affect my back and everything else. And I guess the toughest lesson is just to slow down.
I know that lesson. Oh, I know that one. So listen to it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Donna.
You're welcome. And thanks
bye-bye.
For calling in, hon. Bye-bye. Donna Sebo here. I said I was going to discuss, MRSA, this interesting form of bacteria. That's what it is. It's a bacteria. Now, I'm going to quote from this article because, and also I'm going to give you a website where you can go to the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. So I'll be giving you that information so that you'll have that handy if you want to do your own research. Now, this is the exact definition of MRSA. It refers to a type of staph bacteria that is grown resistant to several first-line antibiotics. And there's penicillin and oxacillin and methicillin and amoxicillin. And what they say, and this is important for you if you know of anybody that's going to be going to the hospital, etc., cancer patients have a higher than average risk of MRSA infection for a lot of reasons. The invasive catheters and other devices used to deliver drugs or drain surgical sites offer a point of entry for bacteria. I had a brother-in-law who went through some horrific stuff for that very reason. He was diabetic, and they had him on a dialysis machine. Okay, hospitals and other healthcare settings foster drug-resistant strains of staph and cancer treatment, or the cancer itself, and it often leaves patients with a weak immune system that cannot mount strong defenses. Now, infections happen when this bacteria, MRSA, enters the body and multiplies because it triggers an immune response. And the MRSA go into the body deeply. It can cause pneumonia in the lungs, serious infections and surgical wounds, or deadly bloodstream infections. Now, basic hygiene, and this is what is important, soap and water. Basic soap and water can ward off most infections, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Keep your hands clean. Keep cuts clean. Don't touch other people's wounds or bandages, and don't share personal items. It's very, very important. And they say plain soap. You don't have to get this antibacterial soap. Just ordinary hot soap and water is just as effective as wiping out bacteria. In fact, they're finding in research antibacterial products may actually be worse. Now, this comes from the Journal of Clinical Infectious Diseases. While plain soap and alcohol-based products lift bacteria off the skin so that it can be rinsed away, antibacterial products contain a chemical called triclosan that may end up leaving more resistant bacteria behind. However, when the two types of soaps were compared in real-life settings, they said no difference in bacteria resistance was seen. And this occurs, MRSA occurs among athletes, skin infections, athletes, military recruits, prisoners, and why is it spread? It is spread by skin-to-skin contact in crowded or unsanitary conditions. And for cancer patients, the agency found that MRSA in healthcare settings such as hospitals and long-term care centers where heavy use of antibiotics can lead to the growth of antibiotic-resistant staph. Precautions in healthcare settings are similar, but patients should not only wash their own hands regularly, they should also inquire if their healthcare providers are doing the same. When someone is inserting an intravenous tube or catheter, that person should wear gloves, a mask, and should always sterilize the skin that they're doing this on first. Now, these are two websites that you can go to. www.3.niaid.nih.gov. www.3.niaid.nih.gov. Or the Center for Disease Control at www.cdc.gov/NCIDOD. That's cdc.gov/NCIDOD. And that's some information for you. It's amazing to me how far away people have gotten from things that I was taught when I was a little girl. It was just what you did. If someone was sick, you kept them isolated from healthy people because germs have passed. And I was just talking with a friend back on the East Coast. She thinks she had ended up getting pneumonia, and she got some kind of a viral infection. And she said what enabled her husband not to get it is that he stayed in a separate room. They put her Kleenexes and anything that she used. They used disposable items. They went into a paper bag. And he closed that bag up when it got full, and out it would go into the trash. And she said he did not get sick. He got a little bit of something, but he really didn't get sick. And constant washing down of things. And again, she said, I stayed isolated from him so that my husband would not get sick. And it worked. These are basics, but keeping things clean, keeping people isolated, if you are a diabetic and you're doing any kind of a dialysis procedure at home, like my brother-in-law did, or you have other, there's just an amazing array of things that can happen. So you need to be savvy, you need to be aware. And it is something that takes taking and paying attention. I know a lot of people don't pay attention anymore, but that is the case. And when you go out into crowded environments, you're likely to pick up a lot of this stuff too, if you're not wise. Now, my friend got it because she said it was an airborne situation. That's what they say. It goes through air systems and other things else. So if you have an open sore, you could catch it like she did. And then, as I said, the last time I chatted about this, a few days ago, there was one of our callers that called in and said, Donna, you should know about oil of oregano. So that they're finding out about ways of treating this because antibiotics just don't work. It's one of the things we have to be aware of. We are finding our world has changed in so many ways, and a lot of things that we thought were the miracles of life and were just absolutely phenomenal that, you know, we're going to have the cure of cures. There's a lot of good things that came about. But what has happened is nature always adapts. And there's so many different forms of life, good, bad, or indifferent, that are on this planet. And they're always looking for a host that they can keep housekeeping with. So we have to be wise here. And good common sense can go a long way. This is Donna Siebel. I know we're just about out of time. Now, tomorrow we're going to be talking about a subject that is not particularly a happy subject, but it is a subject that needs to be addressed, and that is teen depression. My guest is going to be Gary Nelson. We're going to be talking about his book of Relentless Hope, Surviving the Storm of Teen Depression. This is Donna Siebel. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Life is rich and full, and hey, when the sun comes out, go out and enjoy it, because it's out whenever you shine. This is Donna Siebel. Talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Siebel. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
Hi, this is Brentwood from Legion of Love. Just letting you know you can now...